Thank you, Tim. Thank you for coming this evening. Great to see you, especially if you're here for the first time. I hope that what we'll do works perfectly well as a standalone, but also works in relation to if you've been here for the previous 3 weeks as well. As Tim has said, our theme this evening within this Sabbath series is loosing and liberating. And so just a few recap headlines about what it is that we're talking about when we talk about Sabbath. We're talking about resting one day in seven. No work, including household chores. Though what is or isn't permissible, of course, is subject to endless debate, particularly among Orthodox Jews. Did you know, for example, that some electrical appliances have a thing called Sabbath mode? So if you learn the secret code, you can access Sabbath mode. You can spend too long on YouTube exploring this. And in the end, I decided it wasn't worth showing you. But it's an indication of how certain people really wrestle with, you know, what is appropriate on the Sabbath. And a professor of Jewish studies called Michael Fishbane has this definition: the Sabbath sanctifies or makes holy time through sanctioned forms of rest and inaction. I mean, which of us are not looking forward to sanctioned times of inaction? I certainly look forward to that. On this day, certain workaday activities and ordinary busyness are suspended and brought to a halt. In their stead, a whole host of ways of resting the body and mind are cultivated. I think this gives you a hint of why, in a culture where, broadly speaking, we think in terms of people working for 5 days and having 2 days off, Sabbath is quite an intriguing thing to insert, partly because you're saying, well, if you get 2 days when you're not at work, is it possible for you to put the kind of work-related home life stuff in one day and really hallow another and call it your Sabbath? And that, in a sense, perhaps for many of us in the room, is the challenge. And of course, I remember at theological college where suddenly you are faced with this vicars get one day off thing, which feels like quite a heavy thing. But actually what the church is saying to you is learn to practice 24 hours of continual Sabbath, and therefore understand that you can go to the doctor or have a haircut not on your Sabbath. I mean, I think this week it would be good for us at some level to talk about some of these practicalities, and you just begin to think through, well, what might that look like in the rhythm of your life? And of course, we know that our lives are often pretty chaotic. Many of you will have very unpredictable timetables. So how is it possible week by week to say, I'm really trying under God for my flourishing to hallow some time for Sabbath? And of course, in Exodus chapter 20, part of the Ten Commandments, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And that was for the life of the Jewish people. But then within the life of the church, in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 9, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. So there it is. The New Testament doesn't go into great detail, actually, about Sabbath, but it is there in the book of Hebrews. Well, 3 weeks ago, Kate Seagrave asked you, how is this going to change your life? Now, you may have run screaming and you're not here this evening because it was too big of a question. But I have got two questions just for you to mull over. Hopefully they'll appear on the screen. What does Sabbath look like in your life at the moment? And if you have been here over the last few weeks, perhaps you might like to reflect on any changes. So what changes have you made over the last few weeks in relation to observing Sabbath? So what does Sabbath look like in your life? And have you made any changes over the last few weeks? And might you like to describe them? There we are. They're up on the screen. Just a few minutes to discuss on your tables. It may be that you just need to stick with question one and discuss whether anything approaching those little headlines of Sabbath is something in your life at the moment. And I would love to perhaps share the odd piece of feedback if anyone is brave enough. I may come round with a microphone. If not now, at another discussion later in our evening together. Okay. Okay, great. Is anyone willing to share anything with the wider group? I know that it's, you know, it's a big thing, it's a large church, but is anyone willing to just let us know any changes that they might have made, or indeed just an honest reflection on what Sabbath looks like for you? Anyone willing? In a sense, it would be great if someone can just say, do you know what? My life is so chaotic, I find it incredibly hard. That may be quite a releasing thing to hear.
Do you know what?
My postgrads can always be relied upon, so thank you, Harry. But Harry, can I ask you, I mean, do you observe Sabbath regularly?
No. No, I am in Oxford around one Sunday a month, and I try desperately to attend church that Sunday a month, but I am too busy normally to do it. My life is too chaotic for me to properly observe a Sabbath. As joking as it was actually what my answer was going to be.
Okay, well, and I really applaud that honesty. Thank you. Anyone else wants to tell us about their Sabbath or their attempts at Sabbath or indeed anything you might have changed? Great. Thank you.
Sadly, I've only made 3 weeks out of the four, but I have been absolutely bowled over by everything that I've learned. I grew up with a vicar as a father, so Sabbath was a work day, and also it was a day that we really treasured. But what I've learned over the weeks of sitting in this room is the importance, actually, it is for God, and actually seeing it from God's point of view. Rather than us looking at what we do and how we celebrate the day or what we do, I've had an insight over the last few weeks of how God perceives the day that he gave us right at the very beginning, and how important it is for him that we are present with him in the way that we are. And I almost liken it to, we all have a birthday. I love my birthday. We get one day a year that's ours. He gets 52. And the anticipation of a Sunday and the excitement for God to go, do you know what? It's my day.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great. Thank you very much indeed. I know, as an aside, I think for those of us, and there are loads of people in this room who are heavily involved in church on a Sunday, there is a really interesting question about whether you then actually move your Sabbath to another day because, you know, you're kind of working. I mean, a lot of clergy and church workers, Esther Jane is nodding. Anyone else want to share? There will be another opportunity, so, okay. So, our launchpad text for this evening is Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 to 15. So if you've got a Bible, you may want to turn there. Deuteronomy chapter 5, 12 to 15. And Sarah is going to read this for us. Oh, sorry. So she's on the red mic. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
So Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 to 15.
Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or your daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day.
Thank you very much. Now, of course, Deuteronomy, if you like, is a speech or set of speeches delivered by Moses to the Israelites before they crossed the Jordan to the Promised Land. And it's just interesting, I think, to compare this version of the injunction about Sabbath with the Exodus 20, perhaps better known version within the Ten Commandments that I quoted earlier. So in Exodus, two things to notice. In Exodus, the injunction is to remember the Sabbath by keeping it holy. That's Exodus 20, verse 8. But also there, it is a response to the mimicking of God's action in creation, that God created for 6 days and then rested. Whereas here in Deuteronomy, it's a different emphasis. It's not only about remembering the Sabbath, but the word used is to observe, which I think you'll agree it's a stronger sense, not just to remember, but actually to observe this in your own religious life, as the Jews continue to do to this day. But also, it's not here about creation, but rather, you were slaves, but the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. And one commentary refers to this as the Exodus deliverance as the thing which matters here. And I think for this evening, with our loosing and liberating theme, that deliverance is a really interesting word to think about in relation to what happened to God's people at that time, but also what is it for us to have Sabbath as a place of loosing, of finding true freedom, and that being that kind of holy place within our week, which gives us the strength to go out into the world and do all of the other things that God is calling us to. So what I'm wanting to suggest is that actually Sabbath becomes foundational in the Christian life. It's your sat. This may be horrible to hear, Harry. I'm sorry about this, but this is genuinely a really challenging teaching for us, isn't it? But this idea that it Sabbath should be such a priority that that's what we build everything else around. Because how many of us spend our lives with our diaries filling up, and then we see if we can just sneak in a little bit of relaxation time, or we just get used to the fact that we never plan, that we're always just waiting for a kind of 2 hour, 2 hours until it happens kind of invite. And actually God is saying, one day in seven, you can set your clock by it, and this then is the foundation for everything else. And we will be talking this evening and thinking and praying into this evening what it is to be people who really experience the freedom, the liberation, the loosing that God promises. And this is quite serious stuff. But I think that, again, is what God is wanting to do by making Sabbath this beautiful way you described it, this weekly gift to us, where we're very intentional about rest and very intentional about seeking God's presence. Kate Seagrave referred to Isaiah 58, but I wonder if we might turn there again this evening. So Isaiah chapter 58, and I'm going to read from verse 6. Isaiah chapter 58, verse 6. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rearguard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." Now, the thing about this passage is that it is an inspiration often for exhausted and exhausting Christians. The kind of Christians who are saying, "I've got to go and clothe someone else. I've got to go and feed someone else." And of course, Jesus says, well, the poor are always with you. That doesn't abscond us from the duty of care. But isn't it intriguing that this very high value afforded to serving those in need is then placed in the context of Sabbath observance? So look at verse 13. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honourable, and if you honour it not by going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. So if we are going to participate in loosing the cords of injustice or feeding the hungry or clothing those who are naked, we need to do that in the context of Sabbath. We can't burn ourselves out in doing good so furiously that we actually lose the point of what God is teaching us about Sabbath. And notice too that Sabbath becomes the place where joy is released. Then you will find joy in the Lord. And there's someone here this evening who's visiting St. Aldate's, has been around for a few weeks, and we were talking around the table last week, and the joy in the Lord, which they believe to be evident in this place, you may disagree, but, you know, has been a really palpable aspect of them being drawn into the love of Jesus Christ in this church. And to be perfectly honest, it is one of the things that drew me to a more kind of on-the-tin charismatic way of doing Christianity when I had a list as long as your arm of suspicions and confusions about churches like this one, because I kept meeting people who didn't seem to have a kind of synthetic manufactured joy or didn't seem to be so kind of downtrodden by all these demands of living the Christian life, which just seemed to make people kind of pallid and low-level depressed, as far as I could tell. But actually, I met people who really seemed to experience joy as a result of their faith. This was not my upbringing in the Church of England, I'm sorry to say. But, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of... It's not for me to judge their joylessness, obviously, but in my humble opinion, relatively joyless Christians in this country. And it's not good. It's really not good. And I think part of the problem is that this amazing process that we read about here is not taken sufficiently seriously. And so there isn't an expectation that joy might be released, let alone the reality of finding that happen in your midst. And yet, what is God promising? Loose the chains, untie the cords, break every yoke. And this is the work that God longs to do. I mean, goodness me, these were the things that defined Jesus Christ's ministry. And the church only lumbers on to the extent that it does because there is still wonderful truth in this. But when we really step into that, that's when we come fully alive as Christians, I believe. And interestingly, in the book of Colossians, therefore, for the early church, there is an element of corrective about how this all relates to Sabbath observance. In Colossians chapter 2, therefore do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. So something has gone wrong in this Sabbath series if ultimately we are not pointing in the direction of Jesus Christ. Sabbath is a convenient way of us not just, I mean, if we did another, you know, a summer, come and do a summer Bible school on Jesus, you'd think, did they not have a bit of invention at their core, you know? But I mean, Sabbath is a way of a kind of hook into this truth of who Jesus is and the difference he makes in our life and then through us to the world beyond. So we shouldn't get too hung up on Sabbath, because God is gracious, and you know, he sees the way that we can still be serious Christians even if our Sabbath observance is a bit kind of chaotic. And I mean, it's interesting even just to do a Bible Gateway word search on Sabbath and see that really in the New Testament it's Jesus healing on the Sabbath, and then in the book of Acts the disciples preaching in synagogues on the Sabbath and healing on the Sabbath. But it's not like Sabbath is then a big issue in the rest of the New Testament. Paul barely mentions it in his letters. I mean, think of all of the chaos in the church in Corinth. You might think there would be a chapter specifically, as it were, about Sabbath observance, but there isn't. So, you know, we don't want to get over-emphasizing Sabbath in a kind of legalistic way, but we can see in Isaiah, obviously in the Ten Commandments, but Sabbath as a way into this lifelong connection with God, and Sabbath as a way of establishing a rhythm which is good for us, a rhythm which is ultimately sustaining. And I totally see that in a place like Oxford, that is a hard message to hear for many of us. So, back to the tables. One simple but serious question. It's just an outbreak of tongues. Isn't that wonderful? Although tongues, that sounds a bit like Kenneth Williams, which is slightly worrying, isn't it? But anyway, what prevents you from celebrating Sabbath regularly and effectively? What prevents you from celebrating Sabbath regularly and effectively? I mean, just try and be honest. Harry has led the way for us, but what are the issues? What are the factors which mean that celebrating Sabbath, much as it might be a noble, holy ideal, is actually quite tricky? 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, we'll see how we go. Okay, well, unless anyone has a massive burning urge, I'm not proposing to go into plenary at this point, just because it may be, you know, a little more personal, some of these things. Walter Brueggemann is an amazing Old Testament scholar, and he's written a really good little book about Sabbath, which I recommend. He says, "We are a society of 24/7 multitasking in order to achieve, accomplish, perform, and possess. But the demands of market ideology pertain as much to consumption as they do to production. Thus, the system of commodity requires that we want more, have more, own more, use more, eat and drink more." I mean, he uses long, appropriately Oxford kind of words, I guess. "The rat race of such predation and usurpation is a restlessness that issues inescapably in anxiety. Anxiety that is often at the edge of being unmanageable." And I just read that and I thought, my goodness, that seems to put the finger on the kind of relentlessness and busyness of so much of what we deal with. And I say this as someone who hasn't sent a tweet in 8 years and came off Facebook about 5 years ago, and I'm seriously considering rejoining, but it doesn't take me long to realize the way in which these things can affect people. I know that some people have been intrigued by my file of notes that I brought with me. Never one to eschew the opportunity for a lame visual aid. Imagine that God had lots of box files like this. In fact, he had one for every single one of us here. And he decided tonight was the night to open it up. And this box file is about the things that stop us from celebrating Sabbath effectively, which of course really is a kind of proxy for saying the things which stop us from connecting as deeply and truly and wholeheartedly with God as we might and as he longs for us to do. So, Shall we open the box? The bell tolled just as the box opened. Do you know how long I was timing that for? Yeah. No, I really wasn't. I promise I wasn't. Okay, so there are some files in here. It's categorized. God is pretty ordered. First file. This is like a kind of, a bit like a phone bill, but it's time on social media. Yeah, just running through. No, well, I've obviously not. You know, that's very interesting. Yeah. Oh, and the next one, internet history. Okay. What else have we got? Oh, this is interesting. So this is the file. For some of you, this would be bulging, obviously. This is stuff that it's fine to do days 1 to 6, but don't do it on the Sabbath. Why are you doing that on the Sabbath? It's not that it's sinful inherently, but why are you doing it on the Sabbath? Interesting. Makes for interesting reading. Okay, what's next? My tax receipts, April 2006 to 2007. Oh dear, general other sins. This might just be quite weighty for some of us, but just sin getting in the way. Tim, I hadn't talked about this natty illustration when Tim felt prompted that we should confess, but I went to New Wine this year. I've been to New Wine for several years, charismatic Christian festival. And one of the things I felt really burdened about by the end of New Wine is that it seems to me that revival and renewal in the church begins with confession. And sometimes we're kind of quite good at saying, "Ah, here I am, God, fill me, fill me, fill me." But we're not necessarily quite so good at saying, as we did tonight, you know, "Here I am, God. I'm a sinner who needs to confess and be assured of your great gift of salvation, but of forgiveness, such that I can start again." We're almost there, by the way, if you're hating every moment of this analogy. I can only apologize. This folder, interestingly, is transparent, because these are things that block your observance of Sabbath and other people can see. You know, we may not necessarily notice, but other people can see. And sometimes it's quite sad to see the way in which other people are often speaking lies or believing lies about themselves. And often that becomes quite transparently damaging. And others can see it, but we don't necessarily know what to do. But we say things to ourselves like, "Well, you know, I'm not worth a day off a week. I just need to carry on working." Or we might say, "Well, if I don't work today, dot, dot, dot." And the dot, dot, dot may reflect our lack of faith that God provides. It might reflect a kind of workaholism which just overtakes us. There may be a number of things which are going on. If I don't work today, I won't pass, or I won't pass well enough. Any students in the room who sympathise with that one? Or I won't get that promotion. I can't justify the time off. These things can be quite difficult to overcome. And now we are at the last item in the folder. That's always bad, isn't it? When I have learned to number my pages, actually, so that's reassuring. This is the final folder. And this is often, within here, the root causes of all of the other stuff. Sometimes this is really, really challenging stuff. And the thing about, I think, about Sabbath observance, or or other aspects of Christian morality, actually, for my sins. I have a doctorate in Christian ethics. And one of the things that I found myself reflecting on is the fact that we often do ethical thinking in a completely different place to the life of the Spirit and prayer and the notion that God can actually help us to achieve what we are hoping to do if we're seeking to live a more recognisably Christian or holy life. But the point is, some of the most serious things we can't actually sort out on our own. Some of these sins just require, frankly, a bit of self-discipline. And we're all rubbish at that. But actually, we can kind of discipline ourselves. And that's why, you know, seasons of the year like Lent can be quite helpful. They can be counterproductive, but they can be quite helpful. But in here, I would say, are the things where actually, if we're honest, we really need to say, God, I really need you to intervene in your sovereign power to sort this out, because I can't do it on my own. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Or what does Jesus say? Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke, not those dreadful old yokes, not these yokes. Take his yoke. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. This is Matthew 11. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So really my question to us this evening is, are we really willing and ready to let God be sovereign? Are we willing and ready to let God do what only he can do, particularly in those areas of our life where, whether it's something that happened in our childhood, whether it was something abusive that was completely beyond our control, but it has really wounded our ability to live the Sabbath, but frankly, just to live our Christian life. And we come to God and say, will you heal me? I've asked Harry already to read to us Luke chapter 13, verses 10 to 17. This is Jesus healing a crippled woman on the Sabbath. Luke chapter 13, verses 10 to 17. Oh, you need a microphone, don't you? Here you are.
On a Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who'd been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." Then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. Indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath." The Lord answered him, "You hypocrites! Doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her?" When he said this, all his opponents were humiliated, but the people were delighted with all the wonderful things he was doing.
I mean, that is one of those wonderful, amazing stories that frankly speaks for itself, doesn't it? It combines this extraordinary releasing, loosing, unbinding healing that Jesus promises, even to someone who has been suffering for 18 long years. And it's been one of my privileges this year, actually, to see people in this church who have been suffering for similarly long periods of time, set free to one extent or another, Sometimes it's an ongoing journey, of course it is, but to see that God can and does long still to do this kind of release in people's lives, and even on the Sabbath, and even undermining those important religious rules. And I guess for me, the question often is, are we living in the fullness of the freedom and the promise that Christ offers to us? Or actually, are there the things often in this folder, sometimes just ongoing nagging stuff from one of the others, which we haven't yet trusted fully to God? And I do want to make the distinction between the things that we can discipline ourselves about, but also the wrongs that have been done to us, or the situations which are wildly beyond our control, where we desperately need the intervention of God, but God can't intervene unless we've confessed whatever sins we can think of, and we are ready and open. And even actually, if we are ready to step forward in faith. I mean, it's not easy, but I do believe it's true. And surrendering to Christ, therefore, doesn't just mean surrendering to a certain set of propositions about salvation, though it does involve that. But surrendering to Christ, therefore, means reordering our lives, including saying, I am at least going to try and take the notion of Sabbath seriously. But I'm going to do that because I see it as a place, as a way of life from which God can work and meet me regularly. I mean, of course, that's why we still say it's a good idea to come to church on a Sunday. I mean, you know, the Christian notion of Sabbath on the Sunday is complex if you come to church and serve so much, and therefore, you know, you have to think broadly about these things. But it's why it's always really good if you are someone who serves at a particular service to try and find a time also to come and receive. Actually, do you know the thing that has impressed me most about St. Aldate's in the year that I've been here has been the fact that on a Tuesday morning, as a staff team, we pray and worship together, just as we do here on a Sunday. But for the staff team, it's just an opportunity, apart from the poor person who has to lead it at the piano or the guitar, to receive. And amazing things seem to happen in that time as the people who've been set apart to lead this church then pray and intercede for the whole of God's people in this place. But obviously on a Sunday, you know, if you're preaching, you're kind of thinking about that as well. But there is an integrity to that here, which I think is really impressive. But it does require thinking through, well, when am I able to receive from God? When am I able to find serious Sabbath rest? And it might be that for you, at the moment, you need to say, well, at least on a Friday afternoon, I could block that out. I could say there are 4 hours, and perhaps next year they could grow to 6, or even include an overnight. Do you know what I mean? I mean, and God is gracious, so he's willing to have that kind of conversation. But actually this evening, I think there's a much more serious conversation to have with God in prayer, which is about saying, are there things in my life, whether it's things I've done or things that others have done to me, which currently inhibit my ability to enter into this fullness of life that God offers, including in and through the Sabbath? So what I'm going to do is read to you a hymn, which I rather like on this theme. And then we're going to just have a time of silent reflection. And for some of you, that will be a time to think. For some of you, it may be that you just simply want to start praying at that point. But in the silence, I just invite you to think about This depth of relationship that God calls you into, he beckons you into it. And it grieves his heart when there are these things which stand in the way of the intensity of that relationship. And that's what I was trying to illustrate imperfectly with my box file over here. But he does promise to set people free. And he can do that this evening. This is a hymn you may be familiar with. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Come unto me and rest. Lay down, thou weary one. Lay down thy head upon my breast." I came to Jesus as I was, weary and worn and sad. I found in him a resting place, and he has made me glad. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Behold, I freely give the living water. Thirsty one, stoop down and drink and live." I came to Jesus and I drank of that life-giving stream. My thirst was quenched, my soul revived, and now I live in him. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "I am this dark world's light. Look unto me, thy morn shall rise, and all thy day be bright." I looked to Jesus and I found in him my star, my sun. And in that light of life, I'll walk till traveling days are done. Let us pray.